British Prime Minister David Cameron has stated that Somalia is a priority for Britain in terms of foreign policy. London is even hosting a conference on the country's future, with representatives from over 40 governments set to attend. But what hope does the UK really have of fixing Somalia, whose countless problems have lasted for well over two decades now? And why on earth should Britain even want to try?
Because of the piracy risk, or the dangers and the high cost of shipping through the Red Sea and the Gulf of Aden, we've already seen the cost be passed on to our shipping industry, which is huge for the UK.
Some people are saying there are a lot of petroleum in Somalia, recently discovered, and the British are interested in that petroleum.
I think there's a sort of naivety in the British attitude, and an arrogance, which seems to be saying we British can, do anything. We can fix Somalia up.
Somalia is an East African country in which the government has almost no control over the nation due to Al-Shabaab and foreign militaries holding much of the territory, and some provinces even beginning to govern themselves, claiming to be independent from the nation of Somalia. Drought, famine and constant fighting have led international organizations to declare a humanitarian crisis in parts of the country. But just how did Somalia get to this point? Professor Yohan Lewis is a long-time observer of Somalia and has written several books on the state of the country. Professor Lewis, in the broadest possible strokes, how has Somalia come to be in this rather precarious position?
Well, there are many factors involved, as there usually are in these situations. It fell apart, the state of Somalia, in a political sense, fell apart about 20 years ago, when the regime of the Somali dictator Mohamed Siad Barre collapsed suddenly as a result of several liberation movements, in most of which were based in northern and central Somalia. And that left Somalia without a government, of course. And from that day till this, no consensus amongst the Somali political people, the politicians, emerged to create a viable government. There have been several so-called governments, but none of them have succeeded in being an effective administration capable of controlling and ruling the country.
Dr. Laura Hammond is a senior lecturer in development studies at the School of Oriental and African Studies.
Is there something unique about Somalia that has seen it fall into this particularly precarious position?
I think that Somalia, over the last 20 years, Somalia has gone through a variety of different kinds of patterns of conflict. I mean, the conflict started out really as a clan-based fight against a central government that was seen to be working against the interests of people in local communities. And since then, there's been an ideological component layered on top of that. There's been various sort of vying of different kinds of local actors trying to get a piece of the aid pie that's being offered, trying to get a piece of any kind of political future that the country might have. And those things have made it very difficult to try to work towards any kind of reconciliation. And then I think the conflict dynamics themselves have bred a certain kind of a wartime economy that unfortunately allows a small number of people to benefit quite a lot from the continued instability, and they continue to act as spoilers for any kind of a peace.
Zakaria Mahmoud Haj Abdi is a former minister in the Somali government who broke away with many others to form a political opposition to the Somali parliament.
In the very broadest terms, how would you assess Somalia's current situation?
Well, Somalia's current situation is a mess. As you know, the Somali government, central government, collapsed in 1991. And since then, there is no central authority in Somalia. In the beginning, there was civil war within among the Somalis. And then later on, the intervention, external intervention, was came in until a military occupation happened in 2006-2007 by the Ethiopian forces. Now we have almost four or five countries forces invading Somalia. Ethiopia, namely Ethiopia, Kenya, Uganda, Burundi, and Djibouti.
There's a humanitarian crisis that has been going on since the middle of 2011. While there's been very small improvements in food security generally throughout the south of the country, which are the most conflict-affected areas.
Britain has held an international conference in London on Somalia's future. But despite the good intentions and publicity, the measures agreed are more of the same. More support for African Union troops, more humanitarian aid, more focus on a crackdown on piracy. It all felt like a status update on the problem rather than the beginnings of a solution. Prior to the conference, we asked what direction the international community should go in when it comes to Somalia.
What was your initial reaction to the London conference on Somalia taking place?
When I first heard about it, I was quite skeptical. I heard rumors of this would mean British boots on the ground and a really kind of militarized response to Somalia, and that would be the worst possible thing. I think since then, having talked to people who are involved, and I think as well that some of the intentions around the meeting have shifted through a thorough and careful process of consultation with a whole range of stakeholders, Somalis here in the UK, in Nairobi, in Somalia itself, in other places, as well as with other countries and NGOs and academics who work in the place. And I think that now there's an understanding of that really what the best thing that could come out of this kind of a meeting really is a broadening of the political space in which Somalis can decide upon their future, and that that has to be a process that really is Somali-led, not led by any kind of donor.
What are you expecting from this conference?
That's a good question. The Somalis are expecting from this conference the following outcomes. One should be an assertion of the sovereignty, independency, territorial integrity, and the unity of the Somali people. Two, stop invading Somalia by foreign forces. Three, assist the Somalis to have an ownership of their own government. That government will solve all the problems, whether they are Somali problems or concerns from the international and regional and neighboring countries. Unless you have a national unity government that guarantees the rights of their citizens, guarantees peaceful dialogue within the Somalis, guarantees reconstruction and restoration of the Somali state, guarantees the security of the Somali borders, whether it's marine borders or land borders. Unless you have that type of government, then you won't go anywhere. You are actually creating problems. This is what the Somalis are expecting from the British Prime Minister's call for having an international conference in Somalia.
Elections are supposed to take place in Somalia before August of this year. But whether an effective election can be held at all in the country remains to be seen. But why the interest by Britain and the West in Somalia? Niels Hahn, who is an expert in Western interventions in Africa, explains the public reasons for the West enthusiasm.
Who are they, and broadly speaking, what do these countries want?
Well, it depends on who you ask. The main player is, of course, the United States, and then the allies of the United States, which thereby would count Britain. What they want, if you ask more the general in the mainstream, they will say, well, they want to intervene for humanitarian reasons. They're concerned about the humanitarian catastrophe that's unfolding and has been unfolding for many years in Somalia, and they want to promote human rights and democracy.
But foreign policy is rarely 100% altruistic. There's always give and take in diplomatic decisions.
Due to Somalia's myriad of problems, it's always been a priority for aid agencies acting out of the United Kingdom. But why is it that for the British establishment, Somalia is suddenly a priority? Well, there are a couple of reasons.
One such reason is terrorism. Al-Shabaab, formed to fight Ethiopian occupation, recently announced an alliance with Al-Qaeda, something that makes Britain very nervous.
Is Al-Shabaab a threat to Britain? Should we be worried?
Well, it's certainly not a direct threat to Britain. It's true that terrorism has grown considerably under their influence, and that terrorism is certainly a marginal threat to this country or to elements in this country and to other European countries and America.
Well, I think Al-Shabaab poses a range of threats, dangers to Britain. Certainly in terms of regional stability, it poses a very large threat. It's already made its incursions into Kenya and to Uganda, and has made no secret of wanting to continue to move westward from its base in Somalia. So there is a serious danger of instability in the region. As well, I think that the UK is concerned about the idea of Somalis sort of being imported from Somalia into the UK, and there is some evidence that very, very small numbers of young Somali men, some of whom have grown up in the UK, have been influenced by the ideology and the teachings of Al-Shabaab and are motivated to action. Either, for the most part, it's usually to leave the UK and go back and enlist in Somalia, but I think the fear is also that it can go both ways and that those can, that some will come into the UK and potentially carry out threats. I think that, we have to say that that is some kind of a risk, but at the same time we know that of the over 100,000, some people say 250,000 Somalis living in the UK, the vast majority are, peaceful, happily working and contributing both to their own country of origin as well as to the UK. So it's important not to overstate that risk.
It's going to be very difficult to deal with Al-Shabaab, because although they're extremely unpopular amongst ordinary Somalis because of their brutality and because they haven't really done anything substantial to alleviate hunger and famine and poverty in Somalia, although that's the case, nevertheless, any action by a non-Muslim government against them is likely to produce or to be manipulated by them to produce a popular backlash, which will increase terrorism and increase the whole reaction to the West, decreed to be anti-Islamic. Of course, that's a great simplification, but that's how it will be manipulated for sure.
Another possible reason for Western interest in Somalia is its natural resources, particularly oil. The Somali Prime Minister has said that in exchange for help developing infrastructure, foreign countries could be paid with the resources they help to extract, as Somalia has nothing else to pay them with.
Why do you think there's been a sudden interest in solving the Somali issue?
By Britain?
Yes.
Well, this is a question that we cannot answer now, but there are obviously ideas flying around. Some people are saying there are a lot of petroleum in Somalia recently discovered, and the British are interested in that petroleum. Some are saying, still in relation to the petroleum, there are problems in the Arab world, countries that produce oil. So they should secure their hydrocarbons or energy.
We don't know the data for sure, but we know that oil exploration have taken place in Somalia in the 80s and before that, and there may be large oil reserves. That could have a lot to do with this. This is of course not something politicians will go out and say in public, so they will present it in different ways. They will say, well, we need to intervene, we need to stabilize regions because of we're concerned about the people in the country.
The idea that this newfound interest in Somalia has anything to do with oil, for instance, hidden under the that's buried under the country, probably more of a conspiracy theory than anything else. I don't think that there's much evidence that that kind of resource exists there, and I don't think that that's enough of a reason to for countries to kind of push at the level they're pushing. They're pushing very hard to try to come up with some kind of a political solution or to move out of the current political stalemate. And I don't think it's so much about resources. I think it's more about the current costs of both piracy and counterterrorism. Those are much stronger and more persuasive than a potential resource.
The reason why Somalia is most often in the news in Britain is due to piracy. Stopping the hijacking of British ships is something the government would love to take the credit for.
Because of the piracy risk, or the dangers and the high cost of shipping through the Red Sea and the Gulf of Aden, we've already seen the cost be passed on to our shipping industry, which is huge for the UK. That's not so much an Al-Shabaab movement. It's not clear that Al-Shabaab is really in control of the piracy operations, but the continued instability within Somalia means that this practice goes on pretty much unabated.
They have produced a serious threat in financial terms, a very serious threat to trade throughout that area, and to the extent that some shipping has diverted away from going through the Suez Canal, as you know, to taking a long route around South Africa. And so there is a commercial interest in trying to deal with this problem of piracy.
It can be used again as a reason to mobilize a number of different states in the support of a new intervention, overt intervention in Somalia, because most countries will have an interest in that. They can see actually there is a problem. So I think that way it becomes a very political convenient tool as well in the foreign policy in favor of intervention.
Military intervention is something that's been tried repeatedly in Somalia over the last two decades. Currently, Ethiopia and Kenya are the main occupying forces. But would a Western military presence help matters, or merely breed more chaos and confusion?
The decision makers at the British Foreign Office find themselves in something of an ethical and political quandary when it comes in their dealings with Somalia. To intervene in the internal politics of the country would be to draw the condemnation and criticism from the local community. Yet to stand idly by and do nothing as Somalia is engulfed by a humanitarian crisis, well, that would draw international criticism of its own. But this is a tricky position for the West. They do nothing, they're accused of letting Somalia go to seed. If they intervene, it's viewed cynically. Is there a middle ground here?
Well, obviously there can be, But it requires an awful lot of good faith and also an awful lot of hard work on the part of the people who do the intervention to show some genuine benefit being likely to result from what they do and what they advocate. Because otherwise they're just classified with all the other people who've come along and tried to do this and that for their own benefit, as Somalis see it, not for the Somali benefit.
The intervention, as I told you, there is a negative intervention and positive intervention. Up to now, we haven't seen any positive intervention. And obviously, there is a clear cut in between. When you empower the people to have their own government, to have dialogue, peaceful dialogue, to support them towards development and restoration of the Somali state, that is a positive intervention. When you impose leaders to the people that they have not chosen, when you bring forces, outside forces, to occupy the country and kill the people, then this is a negative intervention.
I think there's a sort of naivety in the British attitude, which and an arrogance, which seems to be saying we British can, you know, do anything. We can fix Somalia up. When, after all, there have been 19 preceding international conferences and congresses about the Somali state and about setting and about achieving a peace agreement which would enable government to return to the place. And none of these has worked.
So Somalia is looking for more neutral kind of donors and countries to engage with. I don't think that's to say that there is no role at all for the UK or the US to play. There is, but there must be an understanding that there's probably a limit to some kind ways in which they should engage. And maybe, you know, forming kind of wider alliances with other countries that Somalis have see as having less of a problem, being less problematic, might actually help to open up some doors.
It is the symptoms of Somalia's problems that have drawn the eyes of major powers. Piracy and extremism pose dangers beyond Somali borders. But every time the international community gets together, and there have been 20 conferences on Somalia now, they once again realize just how entrenched Somalia's problems are and how weak the government is.
International help must be well coordinated to support the national security and stabilization plan. As the security institutions take shape, the country needs to disarm. We are far from our goal of eliminating piracy and kidnappings. Some 246 international seafarers are still being held, many of them from developing countries.
Each time they pledge to continue the life support for the ailing country and to keep fighting the symptoms. But the international community, Britain included, does not have a quick cure for Somalia's ills.